From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made on October 5th in the pages of the New York Times. Here was the headline behind the investigative report from Jody Cantor and Megan Toohey. Quote, Harvey Weinstein paid off sexual harassment accusers for decades, end quote. And that report, of course, detailed how Weinstein preyed on women and abused his power. Not long thereafter, an extensive report from The New Yorker offered more striking detail about how Weinstein lured women into vulnerable situations, often abused them, and then found ways to keep them quiet. Weinstein is one of the most powerful moguls in Hollywood, and he's a well-connected Democratic fundraiser, very close to both the Clinton and Obama families. He has used his power to protect himself over the years, but now all of that, for him at least, appears to be over. But there are many questions. What kind of power dynamics are in place to allow this behavior to happen? And what might change that? What can victims do, and what can women do to protect themselves in the future? And really, we're not here to victim blame. We're here to try to do a lot better. How can we raise our boys not to follow in Harvey Weinstein's twisted footsteps? My guests this hour include Beth Cordello, chair of the employment law practice at Polano & Farrow in Rochester. Beth, welcome back to the program.
Thank you.
Also here is Barbara Lee Savoy. Dr. Lee Savoy is the director of the Women and Gender Studies program at the college at Brockport. Dr. Lee Savoy, welcome back.
Thanks so much, Evan.
And Mary Jo Marino is on the line with us, manager of outreach and education at Restore Sexual Assault Services. Mary Jo, welcome to you as well.
Thanks so much.
I want to first say hello to our intern, Audrey Sample, who's in studio just for a minute, because we got to take just a very quick minute to remind you that we're in the midst of our fall membership campaign. And we try to have substantive, sometimes tough conversations on this program. But I think, Audrey, that's part of why someone like you is drawn to these kinds of programs, because we have to have these conversations as tough as they are. And now we need our listeners to step up and call 454-6300. Is that part of why, you wanted to be here this fall, that you want to get into public radio?
Absolutely. In a lot of news stories and journalism, I find that the storytelling aspect is lacking, that the rehumanization is not there. And I don't have that critique of NPR. I don't have that critique of WXXI. I think that that storytelling is an excellent form of it's a vehicle for social change, and it's what I want to be a part of. It's how I feel I can make a difference in the world is giving other people a platform to tell their stories.
Yeah, and sometimes these conversations are difficult, and you see and look. I love my colleagues in journalism across the board. I think journalists have, on the whole, gotten a tough rap, an unfair rap, and we're in sort of this weird time, especially with what's going on nationally. But then you got the Associated Press, of all things, tweeting a link to their story, and whoever's managing their social media account, Audrey, writes, photos, here are pictures of some of the women accusing Harvey Weinstein. And I'm going, what are you doing? I don't understand. So anyway, I'm contrasting that with what we're trying to do, which is understand the issues and try to understand how we can be better, how we can raise boys to be better, how we can understand the power dynamics in play, how to change that. I just view what we do as a little different, and maybe I'm a homer now, but you think that's fair?
Absolutely. And, a 30-second piece on the news, you don't have the time to talk about, as you said, how to raise our boys better, how to teach them to be empathetic, caring individuals, how to be in relationship with other people. You don't have that opportunity when all of your pieces are, 5 minutes at best, at the longest.
Or clickbait, things like that, unfortunately. Right. And that's not just, I don't know what went into that AP headline. I just couldn't believe it. But anyway, Audrey is interning with us this fall, and she and I both would love for you to call 454-6300 to make your pledge of support. This is our fall membership campaign. We have a big, big goal, and we are nowhere close right now, just being honest. We got a long way to go. Your friends and neighbors have been calling, and we need you to do it at 454-6300 or to jump online. It'll take you 2 minutes or less, I promise. WXXINews.org. Thanks, Audrey. Nice to see you in studio as well. Always good to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
Audrey Sample, whose name you hear at the end of the broadcast, but doing such great work. The entire staff here does as well. And that's what your membership dollars support. It's 454-6300, a staff of people who work very hard for you here. I'm going to start with Dr. Lee Savoy, and I just have to assume that that headline hits, and you're probably the least surprised person in the country, unfortunately, aren't you?
I think, sadly, Evan, I think so. I think there's a little bit of battle fatigue here that I'm feeling because this repeats again and again. So the narrative is not one that's unfamiliar. Nevertheless, there is, you know, an interesting kind of constellation of things going on. So there's a lot of people coming forward. This is an underreported crime. We really push it under the rug. It's very, very much about power and fear. And so it's very, very hard to come forward if you are a victim of sexual harassment, particularly in the workplace. And so in some ways, I'm not surprised. And in other ways, you know, there's kind of a good, you know, tension going on as we start seeing more and more women step forward and men step forward to say that they have been victims of harassment.
Yeah, and I want to say, I know that men can be victimized too.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't deny that, but this hour we're going to talk a lot more about men and the problem that men have here in the power dynamic, because more often than not, it's men in power abusing it and women receiving end of the abuse.
And I want to say that that's largely the case because society has really privileged men with power. So they have more power. They tend to be more often in roles as bosses or supervisors. So it's largely when we see something like sexual harassment in the workplace, it is about an imbalance in power. And so that's largely a man-on-woman crime. Doesn't mean that it couldn't be women-on-men or men-on-men or women-on-women, for that matter. But the phenomenon has largely been what you describe. And there's so much at stake. I also think there's a lot of blaming going on. There's a lot of blaming of women here because the kind of avalanche of this was, well, why didn't you come forward sooner? And looking at someone like Meryl Streep, who has a lot of power in the industry, like, why was she quiet? And I think it's really, really important to recognize that the moment that somebody, even with power, steps forward, that they're potentially outing someone without power. And so the vulnerabilities there are multi-layered and complex, and it's not as easy as we think to be able to say, well, I have voice, I'm a person of power, I can come forward and really challenge this, when indeed that's not always the case.
In a moment, I'm going to read a collection of statements and comments that we've seen in just the last few days from pretty prominent people that in some ways sound exactly like victim blaming, and in other ways, you know, sort of kind of going to go on toward that line, and we'll see what our guests think. But let me kind of keep going around the table, and I want to ask Beth Cordello from Polano and Faro. There are frankly, unfortunately, some legal issues in play here, and I'm wondering what your perspective, having represented victims in cases like this,
yes,
you know, how can a Harvey Weinstein use his position of power and use sometimes, I guess, non-disclosure agreements or whatever the tactics he's using, how does he use those advantages in his favor, and what are the recourse, if any?
So I've seen employment agreements, and it's typically in industries where they're sexually charged. It's part of the landscape, whether it's entertainment, whether it's hospitality, restaurants, where there will be employment agreements that, listen, you know, this is a workplace where there's a lot of banter, sexual overtones, and you can... This is part of the landscape, and you can't go out there and disparage the company or any of its representatives. And by the way, that kind of clause is not enforceable under the National Labor Relations Act, and we've talked about it in the context of social media. You can't prohibit employees from talking about the conditions of their employment, but that doesn't stop employers from putting it in there and chilling maybe somebody coming forward. It's a little bit different in the case where it's a middle management person harassing someone else. You're more likely to get relief there. But when it is the very top echelons of the company, they could use that as leverage against you. And then, of course, when people bring forward claims and the company decides to settle them, as the Weinstein Company has apparently done many times over the years with various accusers, there's always what they call a gag clause where they can never talk about it, and that's what the company is paying for. Questions have come up. Various states, New York's not one of them, have said that those types of clauses shouldn't be enforceable when you're talking about a public hazard. So people are asking, as a result of this, because it's so severe and so pervasive, you know, is a serial sexual harasser, particularly one who assaults people and rapes people, shouldn't that be considered a public hazard? And aren't we doing an injustice to the public by constantly keeping this under wraps with money?
Okay. But just to follow up here, is there... I kind of want to ask you this, not just as an attorney, but as someone who, you know, cares deeply about these issues. Are you uncomfortable with any kind of victim blaming? The people who, as Dr. Lisa Voy points out, the wave of commentary that came out and said, well, where were these women? How come they waited? Mm-hmm. How come they didn't? How do you feel about that?
I think they're all very natural human questions. And if you haven't, I spent a lot of time thinking about and dealing with and counseling and litigating these issues, you know, so I feel like I've thought a lot more about the nuances of all this than maybe the average person. So I think when you see this news story, you don't maybe necessarily think about these things. I think they're very natural human questions to ask. And I think we should have a conversation about those things rather than just blindly responding with anger. Because if people understand, then maybe we can move this in the right direction in the future. I've had a lot of employers where it's a very male-dominated workforce. There's posters up, there's jokes around, and the women laugh and they go along and they laugh and they go along, and then finally they've had it. Not unlike, you know, the Fox News reporters where, oh, you know, they get compliments on their legs or this or that and they politely laugh, and then the day comes where they've had enough. And the employer seems genuinely puzzled, like, well, we thought you thought it was funny. We thought you were going along with it. They don't understand that maybe that was unwelcome all along.
Hmm. Well, and Dr. Lisa Foy, you want to add to that before I go to Mary Jo? Go ahead.
I just want to say really quickly, as you were talking, I was thinking about the gag clauses and how that just totally reinforces a culture of silence. And so this culture of silence is something that we see repeated again and again. It's performed by women repeatedly because of the, you know, culture of the work environment or the thought that this is behavior is okay. But they're also so fearful to step forward and challenge that and then all of a sudden fall out of, you know, good faith. And that might jeopardize their security, their stability of their jobs. So they have so much at stake.
Let me turn to Mary Jo Marino, and what I want to do is read a few statements. And Mary Jo, I'll start with you to get reaction from this. As I mentioned, there's been a number of comments that some have accused of victim blaming. So here's actress Mayim Bialik, who she put it together, first of all, a video, about a 6-minute video, that I thought was pretty strong, in which she's talking about what she says to her sons, her expectations for how her sons will become men and how they interact with the world. And I thought that was strong. But she also wrote a piece for the New York Times as an op-ed in which she's been accused of victim blaming. And she wrote in the New York Times, quote, "The choices I make today are self-protecting and wise. I have decided that my sexual self is best reserved for private situations with those I am most intimate with. I dress modestly. I don't act flirtatiously with men as a policy," end quote. Also, designer Donna Karan said that she said last weekend that women today seem to be asking for it based on how they dress and their behavior. She reportedly said in an award ceremony on Sunday, in response to a question about Harvey Weinstein, quote, "How do we present ourselves as women? What are we asking? Are we asking for it? By presenting all the sensuality and all the sexuality, what are we throwing out to our children today about how to dance, how to perform, and what to wear? How much should they show?" End quote. I want to know, Mary Jo, how those comments land with you and if those are the definition of victim blaming.
To be honest, they kind of make me cringe a little bit. You know, we all know, and it's already been mentioned, sexual assault, sexual harassment, it's all about power and control. And so when we're talking about sexual assault, sometimes we're focusing on the actual sexual act. And it's not so much about that. That's the weapon of choice that someone may choose to try to gain power and control over someone else. That's why when we work with survivors every day here at Restore, we're talking to them in a way where we're offering them options. We're trying to empower them with information so that they can make decisions that they feel best about, so that they can start their healing process. We're not trying to take their power and control away from them, like what has just happened in their sexual assault history or sexual abuse history that or incident that's just taken place. But we're trying to empower them to know that what happened to them isn't okay. It has nothing to do with what someone is wearing or what they are doing or if they're out at a bar or if they're walking, you know, down a dark street at night. It has nothing to do with that. It's all about power and control. And I think we need to sort of flip the script on busting those myths that it has to deal with how short a skirt they're wearing and really focus on the power and control and really focus on the perpetrators. They're the ones to blame and they're the ones to question as to why they're behaving in the way that they are.
I also want to read what Gwyneth Paltrow had to say about this, and this comes from Maureen Dowd's story in the New York Times titled "Harvey Weinstein, Hollywood's Oldest Horror Story." And Maureen Dowd writes that, quote, "Others whom Weinstein asked to give him a massage in his hotel suite refused but continued to collaborate with him, like Gwyneth Paltrow, who put aside her qualms to become the, quote, First Lady of Miramax. And when David Carr wrote about the Emperor Miramaximus in 2001 for New York Magazine, several years after the unpleasant experience Paltrow described for the first time last week to the New York Times, he quoted her saying the following, Gwyneth Paltrow about Harvey Weinstein, quote, I think that for every bad story you hear about Harvey, there are three great ones. People are complicated and nobody's all good or all bad, end quote. Dr. Lisa Voy, Gwyneth Paltrow is now taking some heat for being a woman in a position of power, not only to say, look, you didn't speak out when Harvey Weinstein stepped over the line with you, but you then publicly praised him and said that people might not understand him and that he's largely a good person when you knew he might be hurting other women. Is that a legitimate criticism?
You know, I think it's super complicated, Evan. First of all, I think just because someone appears as a good person, a good dad, a good worker, a good husband, does not mean that they're not an abuser. So we must clearly separate one from the other, that you can be, you know, present yourself as a good person. You could actually be doing good things and still be a creep. And I think we see this in Harvey Weinstein. And the fact that Harvey Weinstein supported Planned Parenthood, you know, large donations to the Democratic Committee, particularly Hillary Clinton, the Obamas. I mean, all of those are complicated. People are confused by this. He, you know, he's doing good things. But A does not equal B. And I think it's really, really important that we understand that. I think the second thing that's operating here is that we're so quick to blame victims. We're so quick to blame women for this. So the critique for Gwyneth Paltrow for not coming forward. Why did you, you know, experience that as a victim and then carry on in subverting yourself in the process? And I want to say that we all subvert ourselves. I do every single day. We need to do that in order to, you know, survive in the workplace, in order to survive and, you know, push our own careers forward. So at what point do we start saying, well, wait a second, this isn't about Gwyneth Paltrow not coming forward. It's about an all-male board, you know, not doing anything knowingly about the Weinstein accusations, right? We're not hearing enough about that. And I think we really need to flip the narrative or flip the discourse and start introducing into the lexicon that there are men responsible here for their own behavior. This isn't about, you know, Gwyneth Paltrow or Meryl Streep not coming forward. It's about Harvey Weinstein. It's about the board of Harvey Weinstein. It's about a large male club with a super lot of privilege and power that need to really check themselves.
All right, I think just to add to what Dr. Lisa Voy is saying about A does not equal B, sometimes A exists because of B. And by that, I mean, read Jelani Cobb's piece in The New Yorker right now. It is so strong because people like Harvey Weinstein, and there are analogs throughout history, and there are some names throughout history that you will know and that you will not know, who did some terrible things, but also under the guise of charity, used charity or used a sort of faux charity to sell themselves as some humanitarian while they were literally killing people or abusing people in a widespread way. And that's one thing that enables it. So Harvey Weinstein's quote unquote good acts might have been a way to enable his
Absolutely.
Bad action. And whether that's rationalizing in his own mind, no, I can't be a bad person because, look, I promote women to roles in Hollywood more than my colleagues. Well, I don't know what it is, but it often enables it. And you ought to read Jelani Cobb's piece in The New Yorker for more historical context. And I think it's such a good point. Now, on the subject of the board and what they might have known or not known, Beth, how much trouble is the Weinstein company, Harvey Weinstein, but also the people who might have enabled and empowered him, how much legal trouble are they looking at here?
They're looking at quite a bit. It would appear that they've known about this and have done nothing for a very long time, which is basically to condone and ratify that conduct. It makes them, in the eyes of employment discrimination law, as guilty as Harvey. I saw reports regarding Harvey Weinstein's contract. I don't know if they're true. I haven't seen his actual contract that said if Harvey violates their internal code of conduct, he's responsible to pay back the company whatever damage they incur as a result of that violation, but that he won't be terminated. And that, to me, says they know he is prone to getting into situations that need to be paid out, i.e. harassing women. So it's if those reports are true, and I don't know if they are, then it's very damning for that board.
But is that but help me understand, though, is that unethical or illegal to have agreements like that?
The contract itself does not say that you're allowed to go do criminal behavior, which would not be illegal. From an employment contract perspective, it's entirely legal, but it doesn't say what violations of code of conduct refer to, but the fact that it's now that we're seeing how it played out, it was, you know, them constantly settling sexual harassment or sexual assault allegations, as the case may be, and they knew and they allowed him to continue mm-hmm. to be in this position of power. In terms of their liability, they're as guilty as Harvey.
All right, so listeners, if you want to call the program, and we're going to take Sam's call in just a second. I know a lot of you might have things to say about the Harvey Weinstein scandal. And our second half hour, we'll talk a little bit more about raising kids who become adults and what that means about, you know, introducing them to the world and our expectations of them for how we develop real healthy relationships and make sure that we don't have a world where this continues to happen. It's 844-295-TALK, toll-free, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. Mary Jo Marino from Restore Sexual Assault Services. I'm with our guests who say we should be focusing on the person who's doing the victimizing and not blaming the victims. What can we do for victims? What do they need most? I referred to the fact that the AP puts out a headline saying, hey, here's a series of pictures of the women who are accusing Harvey Weinstein, which I can't even believe would ever have any sort of benefit, not only to the public, but also to these women. I don't know. But what can we do for women?
I think it starts with just listening. You know, sometimes we're very quick to ask a lot of questions and we try to understand why something's happened, and it's really hard to understand and wrap our minds around why sexual assault takes place. We said earlier it's about power and control, but to really think, you know, how can somebody behave in that sort of way? How can somebody hurt another person in that sort of way is really hard to wrap our minds around. And so when someone comes to us and discloses, first it probably took that person quite a bit to have the strength and courage to come forward to us. And so it's important for us to listen. It's important for us to maybe ask what it is that they need to feel supported. Everyone is different. Every situation is different. And every survivor's needs are going to be different. And so that's why I think it's important for us to really sit back, listen, offer our support. Restore is a great resource to offer friends or family that may come to you with a disclosure. We have a 24-hour hotline that's free and confidential. The number to the hotline is area code 585-546-2777. We also have a website. If someone's not feeling quite ready to call us and maybe just want to, you know, learn a little bit more about us or get a little bit more comfortable before picking up the phone, they can look for us at restoresas.org. We're also on Facebook. You know, we have a lot of people that reach out to us at Restore SAS on Facebook, either through comments or messaging, and we'll receive disclosures that way and be able to provide them options and information and support to help guide them on their healing journey. But I think it really starts with listening.
All right, let me grab our first phone call, and it comes from Sam in Rochester. Go ahead, Sam.
I'm going to ask you, Evan, not to hang up on me when I'm talking.
Yeah, go ahead.
What I wanted to say was, we're talking about Mr. Weinstein. Now, before you can talk about Mr. Weinstein, I don't want you to get this misconstrued. Yes, Mr. Weinstein was wrong, but how do you talk about Mr. Weinstein and you got someone in the White House who did the same thing? And matter of fact, did it a little bit worse. And you were talking about how do we explain this to our children. Well, you got to explain how you put this guy in the White House before you can start explaining about Mr. Weinstein. And the lady that keeps talking about Mr. Weinstein and Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama like they were part of what he was doing. They were not part of what he was doing. Do you understand? If they'd have known that he was doing that, they would have not been taking money from him or been walking shoulder to shoulder with him. So she should not be making that kind of implication.
But I
do want to get back to, you have this guy in the White House. Christians put him there in the White House. You gotta first explain that to your children. How did Christians put him in the White House, him confessing out of his own mouth the things that he has done to women?
So Sam, stay there. Let me just say, I was the one who brought up Harvey Weinstein's powerful connections, and he has been close with the Obama and Clinton families. Not to tar them, but to show you that he has used his powerful connections to basically build this patina of this life of charity, of supporting women's causes, of being, you know, philanthropic, when behind the scenes, he's a serial abuser and used all of that power to protect himself and to continue to be able to get away with it. Mm-hmm. And that's what I'm sure with him over now. We'll talk a little bit more, and especially I think Beth will have something to add about how, you know, we can never really know for sure, but how widespread that might be in workplaces and how to change that. But Dr. Lisa Voy, I'll start with you.
Yes.
Here's Sam saying, you know, great, we can talk about Harvey Weinstein, mm-hmm. but look at the White House.
Well, Sam, thanks a lot for your call. And I just want to clarify that in no way was I trying to communicate that Hillary Clinton or the Obamas were implicated at all. If anything, I'm speaking in defense of them and feel like they're an easy target, that we go too quickly to that corner rather than trying to go to the actual perpetrator here, which is Harvey Weinstein. So in all ways, I'm in a complete agreement with you that the Clintons and the Obamas should not be in the conversation, really, and agree 100% with Evan about this being, you know, a cover, really, to be able to use your politics and be able to use feminism as a cover for, you know, your lecherous behavior. I think that's really what's happening here. And then the final point I'll make is that, yes, we're so confused about the fact that we have a current sitting, you know, president who has been misogynistic and clearly abused women in his recorded tape. So the complications are many. It is, I'm a parent, it is super confusing and hard to explain this to our kids. How did we get in this space? And so your questions are really valid.
Yeah. Let me ask Mary Jo, how do you feel about that in light of the fact that the New York Times is out with Maggie Haberman's newest story is on the accusers of Donald Trump are feeling some frustration here. They've told the New York Times they see Harvey Weinstein in a fall, but they felt like more than a dozen coming out kind of collectively here to talk about the man who's now president. And they feel like they don't get that same sort of credibility with the public, or they haven't had the same kind of impact. And that has been hurtful to them. What do you think, Mary Jo?
Yeah, as much as I wasn't thinking this conversation may go political, it's no surprise that it did, and it's a valid point. You know, our president has had allegations against him of sexual harassment, of sexual assaults. There's been multiple people that have come forward, and he's still our president. And so it does ask the question of, you know, how is this allowed? And I think it may contribute to an environment where people that perpetrate these crimes think that it may be okay. What we've also seen, though, is a lot of people coming forward. There have been so many women that have come forward, and once one comes, there's another one. And, you know, I just think they're finding strength and courage within one another's experiences to also feel like they can come forward and try to make change here. And, you know, most of us have seen on social media, there's a movement called Me Too, and it's shining a light on just how pervasive this issue really is. And it's probably shocking for some people that aren't involved in this type of work every day, like some of us on the show are today, but it's happening a lot. It's happening every 2 minutes in the United States. And so we need to do something to change that. And talking about it and shining a light on this topic instead of sweeping it under the rug like we've done for many, many, many years is how we start.
Mm-hmm. Sam, you want to follow up? Go ahead.
Well, it's no longer allegations when the president says it out of his own mouth. He said it out of his own, and now you have a Republican Party who is backing him up, knowing that he has done these things. Now, how do you explain that to our children, especially our young boys, going forward? Because this is something you really need to explain to them.
Yeah.
You know, is how can you admit doing something like that and still have him as the leader of the free world? Then our young men will take on the mindset. Oh, we can do that and still do whatever we want to women. You got to first correct that, and then you can talk to our young men and then other men about like Mr. Weinstein, about what he did.
Yeah, Sam, thank you for the phone call. And after our break, we're going to talk more about that, raising kids, understanding these issues. And we'll also talk about changing the dynamics in workplaces and what could happen to change that now. I will say, To Sam's point about Donald Trump, you know, Donald Trump and his supporters would say, look, he was making some lewd comments on a bus to another guy, and he was probably locker room bragging about something that he doesn't actually do, just trying to look cool. That's sort of the defense I hear. But now you've got more than a dozen accusers who say, no, he really did do those things. Donald Trump himself has bragged about knowing when to go into a changing room for Miss Teen USA for when young girls would be nude. He has said that. And there's new audio that I just saw yesterday, and at least it was new to me. It certainly wasn't something that happened in the last few months. It was Donald Trump on stage at some event, and maybe Audrey or Megan can help me fill me in on when this was. But this audio just dropped, this video and audio just dropped of Donald Trump, and this woman in a crowd asked a question. You know, she wants to work for him. And he says, you know, basically, essentially, you're beautiful. Come on up here. She gets on stage. The crowd applauds her. He puts his arm around her and says, you know, I think you'd have a very good shot or whatever to work for me. And, you know, he joked about, well, what are your qualifications? None, huh? Well, oh, well, when can you start? And it was all based on her physical beauty and the crowd sort of cheering it. And yes, that's the culture right now. That's at least from that, and maybe some listeners think I'm being Pollyanna, but Dr. Lisa Void, that's the culture I see from the president.
Yeah. You know, Evan, if we turn this Trump discussion back to Weinstein, I would say that this is happening in lots of settings. So it's politics, it's Hollywood, it's, you know, education, it's, you know, multiple workplaces. So I think it's a phenomenon that's really, really pervasive. And I'll go back to what Mary Jo said about power and control. If we think about the political question and Donald Trump, it is about government having power over. And there's a lot of power over operating here. And that this notion of privilege also, we understand the definition of privilege is not being aware of what you have. So, you know, you have particular rights, you're not aware of those rights. So there's a lot of white male privilege operating in Washington, D.C., and also operating in Hollywood and in multiple workplaces. And this is where power kind of yields its ugly head. And we see that operating again and again. And the culture of it's not okay to, you know, to have those jokes. I think that's the discourse that we really want to flip. We want to flip that. It's not, those jokes are not funny. We're not laughing. And we need to change that conversation as well so that we don't have someone who's saying, well, you know, it was just a joke. Well, it's never just a joke.
Yeah, I look at him leering at this woman, talking about her beauty. Number one, if my son ends up seeing a video like that at whatever age, the lessons he takes from that are multiple. Number one, beauty matters above all else. Number two, even if you have no qualifications, you might be able to get a job. Number three, it's the man who is bestowing this job on the young, beautiful woman. And then he concludes by talking about how alcoholics struggle when you put a bottle of whiskey in front of them. And for him, that's his weakness, women like that. And he just can't help himself. I mean, he says that in the video. And the message is, well, isn't that normal, though? We all have our weaknesses. And, hey, I'm in a position of power. But, hey, when can you start for me? And, I'm with you, Dr. Lisa. I don't think that's a joke. I think that normalizes that idea. Mm-hmm. And I don't want my son watching that and internalizing that for one second.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, listeners, am I wrong? I mean, I would love to hear from you. 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. I'll take some of your comments when we come back, and we will talk about, again, how widespread is the Harvey Weinstein situation? What do we do to change that as parents? What do we do to change that, you know, in terms of workplace dynamics right now? What tools are at victims' disposals and more? So, we'll take our only break of the hour and come right back. I'm Evan Dawson. Tuesday on The Next Connections, Mike Vini is a mental health advocate who uses his talents as a drummer to help people who struggle with mental illness find their path to recovery. Vini attempted suicide and struggles with depression, but has made it his life's mission to help reduce the stigma of asking for help. He's a guest of NAMI Rochester, but first, he joins us with his drum on Connections. All right, welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. By the way, that video I'm talking about with Donald Trump is 10 years old. It's from the Learning Annex's Real Estate and Wealth Expo 2007. I've posted it on my Twitter feed. I urge you to watch it just to better understand. I mean, at this point, though, it's not going to surprise you. But that's anyway, it's 10 years old, and thanks to producer Megan Mack for helping track that down. And speaking of producer Megan Mack, she's in studio here very briefly because we are in the midst of our fall membership campaign and we need our listeners to support member-supported public radio. That's what it means anyway, member-supported public radio.
That is truly what it means. We can't do what we do every day without your support. Just think for a minute, what would it be like if you didn't have access to this kind of programming every day? If you didn't have connections, if you didn't have Morning Edition with Beth in the morning, or All Things Considered with Alex in the afternoon, how would your life be different? How do we bring value to you? I was talking to a listener at the Clothesline Festival at the Memorial Art Gallery recently, and she said she had just come back from Iceland, and while she was there, she didn't realize how much she missed WXXI until it wasn't in her life. So while she was gone for 2 weeks, she thought, wow, now would be the time for me to be listening, and I can't access it now. We do have the mobile stream if you're away and listening in another part of the country or a different country, but just think about that. What would happen if you woke up one day and WXXI or NPR wasn't here for you? You can help us keep putting these programs on the air by calling. I just almost gave the show line.
You did.
It's so in my head. 454-6300. Our volunteers are here helping us out this afternoon, taking your calls. It takes less than 2 minutes, and they can help you make a donation or a gift that works for you.
454-6300 and WXXINews.org. It'll take you less than 2 minutes. Thank you.
Thank you.
That's Megan Mack, producer. And let me just reset before we read some of your comments that have come in. We're talking about the Harvey Weinstein scandal. On the line with us is Mary Jo Marino, Manager of Outreach and Education at Restore Sexual Assault Services. In studio, Dr. Barbara Lee Savoy, Director of the Women and Gender Studies Program at the College at Brockport, and Beth Cordello, Chair of the Employment Law Practice at Polano & Farrow. Beth, we can't know for sure, but how prevalent do you think the Harvey Weinstein situation is? Even if it's not to this level, how common do you think this is in American workplaces?
I think it's relatively common, unfortunately, in the American workplace. You know, women are not at the uppermost levels, and I think really if when we see great change in this area, that is going to be what puts us there, because for it to really be stomped out within any organization, it's got to be not accepted from the top down.
So you mean more women in management will help change this?
Correct.
I think so. And if you look at CEOs, Fortune 500 companies, you look at CEOs in general, executives and organizations, it's still nowhere near parity.
Correct.
So that's one way. And what else is available now to start changing this culture? Anything that you see from your legal perspective that would change what has allowed Harvey Weinstein to get away with this and people like him?
Well, you know, maybe the story and the, you know, this has been over a week now, right? And it's still in the news every day and people are talking about it. That's encouraging. I mentioned to you earlier, you know, it's been 26 years since Anita Hill testified against Justice Thomas. And that was the first time really that sexual harassment in the workplace was a big news story and something people were really thinking about. And then, you know, we had with President Clinton, Monica Lewinsky. And, you know, there have been these things that have been big news stories, you know, throughout the past couple decades. But now with the prevalence of social media and the way people have to, you know, women didn't have a collective way to come forward back then that they do now with social media. And so I think maybe now it's in the consciousness more than ever and the acceptance and the notion of a quote-unquote open secret won't any longer be tolerated.
Yeah, there's a hashtag now, Me Too, and that's already prevalent on social media that you'll see, again, almost always women sharing their stories of how they have been victimized. And none of us could read all of them, but it's worth just spending some time with it and considering those perspectives. And to Beth's point, you think about Anita Hill, 26 years ago,
26
you said now.
26 years ago.
Yeah, I still remember, you know, the buzz, and I was a younger man then.
Yeah.
but I still remember that. And even now, looking back from what I've read about that whole issue, was how much heat she took for coming forward.
Oh my gosh, it was unbelievable.
Yeah, you know, and victims, of course, still can take heat. So that's one part that is still, you know, that's still a risk. And you've been hearing from all of our guests this hour about how difficult it can be for victims. But let me go ahead and read some of your comments that have come in, and we'll see what our guests have to say about that. Jane writes to us and says, the caller's, she's talking about Sam earlier, the caller's outrage seems myopic, considering Bill Clinton was elected twice despite allegations of sexual harassment and rape in his past, and he clearly abused his power in office. So Trump isn't new. Clinton, Kennedy, it's gone on all sides for decades. Dr. Lee Savoy, what do you think?
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. When Evan, you called me to invite me to be on the show, I made a list. I actually Googled and made a list of, you know, how long has this been going on? How many names could we pull up? And there are just multitude, from Bill Cosby to Bill Clinton to Anthony Weiner and Elliot Spitzer and Bill O'Reilly and Donald Trump and Hugh Hefner and Jerry Sandusky and Arnold Schwarzenegger. I mean, the list goes on. So in some ways, I'm so sympathetic to the question, and that we tolerate this. So we tend to scrutinize it. We're scrutinizing Harvey Weinstein right now. And sadly, my experience says that Harvey Weinstein's probably going to emerge from this in some other way. He's going to, you know, take on a new identity, get a new company, find a new place for himself, lie low for a little bit. But we always see these criminals that are ones with power and prestige somehow or another surmount their circumstances, as we saw with Bill Clinton and many of these other names.
And Woody Allen and Roman Polanski.
Yeah.
I mean, they've reemerged.
Absolutely.
We thought they were done in Hollywood, and here, and they're not.
And so they have the resources and the power of which they can write out their circumstances.
And Mary Jo, can you tell me a little bit about how that might impact victims, to see the person who has victimized them not only kind of land on their feet, but continue to thrive when you feel like finally there should be some justice?
Yeah, well, it's been great that we've had so much discussion about sexual assault in the media. It's so triggering for survivors in the community hearing that, you know, there's no justice. And that's a lot of what people that reach out to Restore, they're looking for some sort of justice. And that can look very different for different people. But, you know, we've had people reach out to us that have said, you know, I'm in my 80s and I've never talked to anybody about what happened to me as a kid. You know, that's the culture we live in, where people don't feel safe to come forward and get help for themselves and live a life that they deserve. And so when these stories are all in the media and we see people sort of land on their feet, as we've been saying, it's very discouraging. And that's why I'm glad that Restore has a voice on this show, just to let people know that they don't have to go through that alone. And if they're being triggered by anything that they're hearing or seeing on the news or in social media, that they can reach out to us for support.
It's the same kind of idea that again, usually men have, when you see a woman walk down the street and the man says, "Hey, smile, show me a smile," as if we are entitled to that. Mm-hmm. And then that same man will say, what do you mean? That's not harassment. I just want her to smile. She's a beautiful woman. She should have a smiley face. Why can't she smile for me? Because men are not entitled to that. And at some point, Dr. Lisa Voy, we've got to teach our children. I mean, my son's 5, and I worry all the time about what he's exposed to. Parents can only control so much, but by God, he's going to learn from me that you don't have any expectation or entitlement at all. And even just that little thing that the men go, smile. You know, we have no way of knowing how that feels to be on the receiving end of that.
Yeah. I think, Evan, you've raised a really important point, because I think one of the problems operating here, probably the root of the problem, is this toxic culture of masculinity and what it means to be a boy or a man and how to really perform that masculine role, which we tend to give a lot of capital and power to. And at the same time, we're giving less capital and really diminishing what it means to be a woman and to not take up very much space and to, you know, be objectified as you're gazed upon and looked upon versus how you contribute. So I think, you know, your fears are well grounded. I think if we start looking at how can we begin to correct some of these problems, it is looking at this toxic culture of masculinity and ways it's reinforced, you know, in multiple environments of which we're a part.
Mary Jo, you want to add to that?
Yeah, I was just thinking, you know, somebody that has someone, you know, on the street sort of saying, you know, smile, you're a beautiful person. There are some people that may not take offense to that, and that's okay. That's their right to decide if they're offended by that or not. But there could be other people that maybe have a very severe traumatic past or traumatic history that then is told that, and that's where the triggers happen. So they may have this one thing that may seem like, oh, it's so simple, I just wanted her to smile, but it brings them back to some history of traumatic events that have taken place that maybe they haven't dealt with yet, or maybe they're not ready to talk about, and it could just sort of send them on a tailspin. And that's where I think people don't understand. Some people may think, oh, it was just an innocent comment, where there just could be so much more behind it.
Yeah, we're not entitled to that. Guys, we're not. Let me grab the phone call. This is Carol in Pittsford. Go ahead, Carol.
Yes, can you hear me?
Yep, go ahead.
Yes, I, as a victim of domestic violence, I want to speak to the shame. And one of the most difficult parts on leaving was that I had to tell someone I was having a problem so that I could get perspective and figure out what to do. But when I tried to speak about it, the response that I got from people was, shame on you for making me uncomfortable with this information. Please don't tell me anymore. I don't want to know. Because the person that I was speaking about was someone that they liked. They were charismatic, or they were involved in the community. They helped raise money. They did these things, and they were uncomfortable with that position, that information that they had. So my challenge is to the listener, you know, whether or not we can figure out what someone else's intentions are and listening to that, I don't think we necessarily can answer that question. But maybe the challenge to the listener is, how do you respond when someone gives you uncomfortable information? And I think this speaks to bullying as well, because that's what we are talking about here as well, is the bullying. It's all wrapped up in the same thing, and we have to deal with the shame. So to the listener, I challenge you, when someone tells you some information that makes you uncomfortable, how do you respond, and do you take a position? That's all I have to say. Thank you.
Carol, thank you, and I really appreciate the sentiment there. And let me turn to Mary Jo Marino, Manager of Outreach and Education at Restore Sexual Assault Services, to respond. Go ahead, Mary Jo.
Yeah, I'm so sorry that that was the response that you had when you, you know, found the strength to come forward. You deserved a lot more than that. You know, I agree with that. Shame is definitely attached to sexual assaults and domestic violence. And, you know, sometimes we try to minimize it because we don't want to think that it can happen to us. And I think that's why sometimes people get really uncomfortable with knowing that this is real and that someone that they know, love, and trust has experienced it, even if their life seemed perfect on the outside. And so, you know, that's where talking about this and just sort of shining that light to let people know that this is happening, it's happening a lot. You probably know somebody that's experienced it, but they just maybe haven't told you about it yet. You know, that's where having open lines of communication and just having a supportive environment in your workplace can really help with people feeling like they can come forward when they're ready.
Hmm. Well, I was hesitant to read Alan's email, but a listener named Alan, I understand the point Alan's making. He says it's not a long email. I said he's a parent of daughters. He tells them, you know, that if you wear a short skirt, it might suggest certain things, that he doesn't want her to do that, that he thinks as a parent he should have a role here too, to let his daughters know the signals they send, and he doesn't understand why that's wrong. Mary Jo, can you respond to Alan's point as a parent there, what he says to his daughters?
I think it goes back to what we've been saying this past hour, is just that sexual assault's about power and control. And somebody, you know, if I carry a purse on me, it doesn't make it right for somebody to steal my purse. So it shouldn't matter what someone has on, and that's not a contributing factor if someone's sexually assaulted. It's all about that power and control. And that's an education piece. That's part of what Restore does each and every day. We do education programs at all ages, at schools, at different agencies. We do professional trainings about sexual harassment. And, you know, that's a conversation that just has to continue so that we know what the real reason is for sexual assault, and that's power and control.
Dr. Lisa Voy, thoughts on that?
Yeah, my thoughts on that is that I would really encourage the writer to celebrate his daughter's sexuality, because I think girls are so afraid of showing themselves and having confidence. And I think if they're confident about themselves, I would want to encourage that. We always, you know, want to guide our children to make good choices, but what they wear and how they present themselves should not be conflated with any violence or sexual
abuse. But Alan might say, isn't there a line?
You know, I'm a mom to two daughters, and I think, you know, ultimately we can, you know, encourage our kids to make good choices, and, you know, the ways they choose to express themselves sometimes are how the clothes they wear and the fashion they choose. And I think I see too many girls that are afraid to be themselves, that are uncomfortable with their bodies. So I think the more that we can get girls and women to feel comfortable about themselves and their sexuality, that's a step in the right direction. I think the thing connected to this is we're always asking women and girls to tolerate and put up with so much. They should tolerate, you know, the caller before that said, you know, she was shamed. You know, it's like put up with the abuse. You should be able to deal with this. And I think we've got to really switch the conversation and the ideologies here. And maybe some of that is about just giving girls and women a little bit more freedom and not restricting some of their choices because we're so afraid of what's going to happen.
All right, 30 seconds, final thoughts from you, Beth Cordillo, on anything you want to take there. Go ahead.
Final thoughts on young girls. I have daughters as well, and I think I understand where Alan's coming from as well. I think the differences are they expressing themselves in a certain way because that's what they see in the media, that's how they see women represented, or is that truly how they want to represent themselves? And so long as they're instilling that thought process, are they doing it for themselves or for others, and why?
But I think one of the most important points here is that let's get away from blaming victims here.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Let's keep the focus on the Harvey Weinsteins and the people who do the victimizing where it belongs. Let's keep the focus on justice, about welcoming victims to share their stories when they are ready to do that, to not shaming and shutting them down. And I want to thank all of our guests for their perspectives and various perspectives here. Mary Jo Marino, Manager of Outreach and Education at Restore Sexual Assault Services. We will put all of the contact information on our podcast page. You can find it. Mary Jo, thank you so much for taking the time for the program.
Thanks.
Beth Cordillo, Chair of the Employment Law Practice at Polano and Farrow in Rochester. Wish you didn't have to handle cases like this, but thanks for doing it. Thank you, Beth.
Thanks, Evan.
And Barbara Lee Savoy, Dr. Lee Savoy, is the Director of the Women and Gender Studies Program at the College of Brockport. Again, wish we didn't have to have these conversations sometime, Dr. Lee Savoy, but thank you.
Thank you so much, Evan.
All right, thanks to Rob, Megan, Audrey. I'm Evan. Talk to you Tuesday, member-supported public radio.